I'm Kevin Hatchard, and this is the Ultimate Sports Podcast. Coming up today, I'll be joined by the sports broadcaster Daniel Freeman, and we'll preview the third and final Lions test in Sydney. We'll look ahead to the ladies' final at Wimbledon, next week's first Ashes test, and this weekend's German Grand Prix. But we'll start with rugby and some controversial selections by Lions head coach Warren Gatland ahead of that third and final Lions test in Sydney, which will ultimately decide the series. The biggest story, Brian O'Driscoll dropped from the starting 15 and replaced by Jamie Roberts. So it'll be an all-Welsh centre combination between Jamie Roberts and Jonathan Davis. We'll hear from Davis in just a little while. There are 10 Welshmen in the starting 15. So Warren Gatland, Dan, very much going with what he knows.
Yeah, definitely. Similar to Clive Woodward, of course, in 2005, I think it was, when he chose a lot of English players, when in fact Wales had won the Grand Slam that year, and he stuck with what he knew then. It backfired on him throughout the whole of that Lions tour, actually. But Warren Gatland, yes, a lot had been said in previous matches, and even as far ago as when the squad was initially picked, about the amount of Welsh players in the squad, and now we're talking about the amount of Welsh players in the actual starting 15, and like you say, without a shadow of a doubt, the biggest controversy of the Lions tour, with Brian O'Driscoll, his most experienced player, and some still view him as one of his best players as well, completely dropped, not just from the 15, but from the squad as a whole. And it must have been a really tough decision for Gatland. I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall in that room when that decision was announced to Brian O'Driscoll.
Well, Gatland admits it was a difficult decision to make.
Quite a lively meeting that we had with the coaches last night in terms of going through and making the final selection. It was tough, but you know, we've come up with what we think is a side that's good enough to do the job on Sunday.
Well, one of the players who will be involved in the match is Jonathan Davis. He'll line up at centre alongside his Welsh compatriot Jamie Roberts. Let's hear from him now, and he also talks about O'Driscoll's reaction to being dropped.
Obviously over the moon to be involved in such a massive game, and you know, training's gone really well this week, and I think the boys are looking forward to it. You know, it's a huge task, and we're really focused on the job in hand. You know, when the team was announced, obviously personally I was over the moon to be involved, and you saw this team, and you know, it was a few changes, and you know, I was just glad to get the nod, and you know, everyone's been really close and together, and you know, we know how big important this game is, and we're looking to do the job on Saturday. The importance of this game is huge, and you know, all the boys are focused. You know, we had a good couple of days of resting up, and we've had a good training the last couple of days, and you know, we're ready to do the job. You know, I think the boys have an understanding. We've gelled quite well over the last 6 or 7 weeks, and you know, I think the standards, like Johnny set of training, you know, he's a bit of a slave driver, but you know, it's about delivering under pressure, and that's what we're looking to do, and I think that's what we'll try and do Saturday. One of the biggest games of my career ever, and a lot of this squad's fortunate to have played in big games. I think we can draw on that and use it to our own positive ability. You know, we're excited about it, and we just got to make sure that we don't fear it, just embrace it and go out there and look to do the job.
Jonathan Davis there, that interview courtesy of Talking Rugby. And it was interesting, Dan, wasn't it, that he said O'Driscoll shook his hand and took the decision well. That's been a feature, I think, of this tour so far. There has been a togetherness there, everybody on the same page, pulling in the same direction. Obviously, O'Driscoll would have been desperately disappointed, as you say, not to even make the match day 23. But he hasn't been disruptive. And it's certainly a lesson that some other sports could take, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And we saw pictures of O'Driscoll hours after that decision. I think he was part of a training event with kids out in Australia just after the announcement had been made. And he took full part in that, signing autographs. And Brian O'Driscoll, I think, for the way that he's taken this, sums up the way that the tour has gone so far. There hasn't been any messing around at all. Been very professional. All looking ahead to Saturday now, and one win each going into the final match, all going on that final match in Sydney. I can't wait.
Well, yeah, Dan, it should be an absolute cracker. We've had two very, very close matches so far. Of course, the Lions so close to sealing the series last week in Melbourne. 15-9 going into the closing stages, but the Australians fought back, got that converted try, and Lee Halfpenny couldn't quite win it with that long-range penalty with the last kick of the game. So it's going to be ever so tight. Intriguing that the Australians have brought the veteran George Smith back into the fold. He'll have certainly a big say in terms of leading that team, in terms of an experienced head, but it should be very, very close indeed. But Warren Gatland has set his stall out. He says that he's made the right rugby decisions, and only time will tell. If the Lions win, then Gatland will be lauded as a genius, but if they lose, there'll be a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth regarding that decision to drop O'Driscoll.
Well, let's switch our attention now to tennis, and there'll be a surprise lineup on Saturday for the Wimbledon ladies' final as France's Marion Bartoli takes on Germany's Sabine Lisicki, who's been the giant killer of the tournament. Lisicki, of course, knocking out the favourite Serena Williams in the last 16, and then dumped out fourth seed Agnieszka Radwańska in the semis. And Kev, you've been watching quite a bit of the ladies' tournament this year. And do you think that these two are the right match for the final in terms of the best players out there?
Not necessarily the best players out there, but in this tournament, the best performers, definitely. Bartoli's been very consistent. She's got a game that's made for Wimbledon, really. She's got a very unfashionable two-handed forehand and backhand, which I think is what makes her one of the most intriguing players on the tour. She's had problems both on and off the court in recent seasons, but she's been very consistent. She's dealt with the pressure all the way through. She absolutely demolished the Belgian Kirsten Flipkins in the semi-final, moved her all around the court, caused her all kinds of problems, dropped only three games and won that match in just over an hour. So Bartoli certainly deserving of her place in the final. What's been interesting is that most of her matches this time around, she's actually been the highest ranked player. She says it's different to 2007, which is when she last reached the final, because this time the pressure has been firmly on her shoulders.
Last time I was so young in a way, and I was every time the underdog coming out on the court, which this time it was totally the opposite. I was every time the highest ranked player, and I needed to put out a great performance in order to go through. So I think I've been able to deal with the pressure really well and keep improving throughout the championship, keep playing better.
So Bartoli has produced some great performances in matches she was expected to win. Lisicki, though, has produced great performances in matches she certainly wasn't expected to win. And she's also shown that she's a fighter. She looked as though she was going to lose that match against Serena Williams in the last 16, but she fought back in that third set and held on for what was a memorable win, one of the biggest shocks at SW19 for several years now. And then in the semi-final, I thought she was very, very impressive in coming back against Radwańska, because she was 3-love down in the deciding set. The radar was broken. Her shots were being sprayed all over the court. She had an enormous number of unforced errors, but she found a way to win, and that's what you have to do in these big Grand Slam matches. It's a very intriguing clash of styles, this final on Saturday. Bartoli has a decent serve, but not an amazing serve, but she's very much a touch player. She's got great drop shots, great lob, and she hits through very flat, so that'll cause Lisicki some problems. Where can Lisicki cause Bartoli problems? Well, she's got a very big serve, and she's got very fast ground strokes, real power off both wings, and I think it's going to be a fascinating clash. Well, of course, we don't know what's happening in the men's tournament at the time of recording. We hope, from a British point of view, that Andy Murray made it through to Sunday's final, either against Juan Martín Del Potro or Novak Djokovic. But it's certainly been a very intriguing men's tournament as well. Now, of course, Ashes fever is starting to grip the country. The first Ashes test takes place next Wednesday between England and Australia at Trent Bridge. England with a decent performance against Essex in their warm-up match. Graham Swann taking 5 wickets after allaying fears that he had a damaged forearm. He was struck while batting and making a decent score as well. But Swann coming back and proving his fitness by taking those 5 wickets against Essex. And Australia have been in decent form as well against Worcestershire. It's all bubbling up nicely, Dan, isn't it?
It certainly is, and it's been a real summer of cricket. Everyone's just ready now. Everyone wants the Ashes. I, for one, can't wait. And the match against Essex last week, it was a strange performance from England in the fact that they found themselves 150 for five. But in amongst that, we did see Kevin Peterson return to some good form, 49, knocking the ball about very comfortably indeed. And I think he's coming into this series just at the right level of fitness and obviously getting his iron as well. But saying 150 for five, everyone's maybe thinking, well, what's going on here? And then Graham Swann and Tim Bresden put on a couple of hundred between them, and England turn it in a good score. The injury fears for Swann as well. Tyrone Mills, the Essex bowler, fancying himself to take a couple of Englishmen's heads off with a couple of bounces in there. So, no, it's been an interesting warm-up for England in that respect. Obviously, Australia seemingly just putting to one side, obviously, the changes that they've had in coaching and in the management. And I think they'll be happy that that's sort of quietened down. But it certainly seems like it has done over the past couple of weeks. And like you say, we arrive on a Wednesday at Trent Bridge. A Wednesday start, I'm not too sure what I feel about that. Obviously, normally you'd see a Thursday start, especially for a test series. But a Wednesday start, so be it. And let's just hope maybe by Saturday we see England go one up in the series.
Well, all the build-up has been that England have been favourites and Australia in disarray, but I think you write off Australia at your peril. The change of coaching that they've made, I actually think, is a massive positive for them. I think Darren Layman is a very good choice to replace Mickey Arthur as coach. He's very much a player's man, and he'll get respect because he's got a great career behind him, mainly as a batsman, but also as a decent spinner as well. He's a very genial guy, very easy to get on with. I think he'll get the best out of those players, and I think the one thing he'll be able to do that Arthur could never do is get them all pulling in the same direction. So I think straight away that boosts the Aussie camp. The other thing as well is that Michael Clarke is fit and in form. He's had all of those back problems, of course, but he scored 124 from just 98 balls against Worcestershire in that Ashes warm-up match. So that's a big, big boost for Australia, I think. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how England deal with the pressure of being favourites, because often in Ashes series they are the underdogs. So we'll see how Alistair Cook and his men get on with that one. Let's switch our attention then to Formula One. The German Grand Prix is coming up, but of course the sport has been racked by controversy in recent days because of the tyre blowouts at last week's British Grand Prix. Six incidents of tyres blowing, four of them during the actual race itself, and some very dangerous moments indeed. Now, Dan, the F1 drivers say they will boycott the German Grand Prix at the Nürburgring if there are any repeats of those tyre problems. So not for the first time in Formula One, controversy ahead of a big race.
Yes, certainly, and it's a shame because the British Grand Prix last weekend at Silverstone, all the news out of it, of course, about the tyres, and incidents, of course, for Lewis Hamilton, Felipe Massa, Fernando Alonso, Jean-Éric Vergne, Esteban Gutierrez and Sergio Perez, all affected by tyre problems last weekend. And, of course, Sebastian Vettel not finishing the race last weekend. And that just opens it up a bit going into the German Grand Prix. Of course, it's the home one for Vettel as well. So things all looking very interesting indeed. With the news before the race that Mark Webber had announced that he'll be leaving Formula One at the end of the season, I'm sure that he's desperate to get on a high now. We're roughly around about halfway through as well, and it's certainly when things are starting to hot up. I feel as if Vettel had won last weekend, we could have been looking at a sign-up drivers' championship. But with him not finishing the race, it certainly livens things up.
And finally, our very own horse whisperer, Charlie Owens, is here to bring us the very latest from the racing world.
Thanks, Kev, and I'm going to focus on two of Saturday's most prestigious races. I'll start with the Group 1 Coral Eclipse Stakes at Sandown, which is scheduled to be run at 3:50. It's a mile and a quarter race and has attracted a field of seven. Alcazin will almost certainly go off favourite. He's won his last four races, and the key to solving this race conundrum could be his latest win, which was in the Group 1 Prince of Wales Stakes at Royal Ascot, where he came from well off the pace to wear down the front-running Mukha Dram. Alcazin won by a quarter of a length, but was noticeably starting to Liverpool clear as they passed the winning post. Now, the Fogue was a further 3.25 lengths back in third, and both the Fogue and Mukadram are taking Al-Kazim on again. But I see no real reason as to why they should turn the table, especially as Al-Kazim's jockey James Doyle reckons the Sandown course will bring out more improvement.
The horse has come out of Ascot very well, and I sat on him last Saturday, and you know, he galloped very nice. Obviously, it's a tough race, but I think Sandown will suit my fella better, you know, longer straight and uphill finish will suit me a bit better, so yeah.
Now, in the build-up to this year's Coral Eclipse, there's been a lot of positive noise about the chance of the German horse, Pastorius. Last year, he won the German equivalent of the Derby, and back in April, he landed the Prix Ganay, which is a Group 1 race at Longchamp. Now, that's great form. But if you're thinking of supporting him, then you have to forgive his latest abysmal performance in Singapore, and I just can't. In my mind, the biggest danger to Al-Kazim will be Aidan O'Brien's runner, Declaration of War, who also won at Royal Ascot, but over the shorter trip of a mile. So there might be slight doubts over his stamina, but the flip side of the coin is that he's the grandson of Danzig, and he seems to have inherited all that horse's speed and his love of fast ground. So, the way I predict the race is that Al-Kazim is the most likely winner, but that Declaration of War will run him very close. Finally, a quick mention for the Lancashire Oaks, which takes place at Haydock at 2.55. It's a race for fillies and mares over a mile and a half, and the one that stands out like a sore thumb is Alba Sharar. Now, she was one of the most unlucky runners at this year's Royal Ascot. In the Wolverton Handicap, she was repeatedly impeded, blocked and barged, so that 2 furlongs from the finish, she was last and had lost all her momentum. But she's full of class and she rallied and was flying at the finish. All right, she only finished 5th, but she would have won the race had it been over an extra furlong. Well, on Saturday, the Lancashire Oaks could be tailor-made for Alba Sharar. It looks a weaker event than the Wolverton Handicap at Royal Ascot. She's also only taking on her own sex, not the colts or geldings. And another added benefit is the race is over an extra quarter of a mile. All these factors combined suggest to me that she's got to have a standout chance of winning the Oaks for her Godolphin trainer, Syed Bin Sarur.
Thanks, Charlie. That's it for this week. Of course, the Tour de France continues this weekend as the Pyrenees stages begin. So we're hoping, from a British point of view, that that will play into the hands of Team Sky's Chris Froome, who, of course, is a great climber. So we're hoping that he'll climb the standings over the next couple of days. From Daniel Freeman, Charlie Owens, and myself, Kevin Hatchard, it's goodbye for now.